I thought I was helping people, coaching them, guiding them, but the truth, I was just using prettier words for control. Welcome to a world where vulnerability is currency, and truth is the most dangerous weapon of all. This isn't just a story about manipulation, it's a confession. A former elite coach exposes the dark psychology behind influencer culture, sex-based mentorship, and financial mind games hidden behind smiles, mantras, and so-called healing. Told in a raw, first-person voice, this psychological thriller pulls you into the blurred line between power and compassion, control and connection. Because sometimes the most dangerous manipulators don't even know they're manipulating. And by the time you realize you're the villain in your own story, it's already too late. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. The smile that sold the lie. It started like most cons do, with a smile that didn't quite reach the eyes. I met Sophia at a wellness seminar in a boutique hotel off the coast, the kind of place that sells silence as clarity and trauma as transformation. She moved through the crowd like a force of nature cloaked in silk and psychology tips, dropping phrases like true body intelligence and cognitive realignment as if she'd trademarked truth. I was there looking for answers, desperate for direction after crashing out of my third startup and a relationship that ended with a broken glass and the words, "You manipulate everything." But that smile, it didn't judge, it invited. I didn't know then that she'd studied behavioral psychology, cognitive skills, and dark psychology the way others studied wine, savoring every layer of control. Her presence was intoxicating, and I let myself believe her compliments were real, that her invitation to the elite ascension circle meant I was special, not targeted. Within a week, I was part of the group. Within a month, I was coaching under her brand. We weren't coaches, though. We were emotional architects. We taught mitigation techniques, ran private events, whispered secrets about shadowed truths behind societal programming, and weaponized persuasion methods with the finesse of a stage magician. My job was to recruit, to find lost people like I'd been, and help them align through inner work, spiritual detox, and premium monthly packages. What we were really doing was social manipulation, feeding them half-truths dressed in white linen and selling them back to themselves at 10 grand a pop. I'd learned to mirror facial expressions, to touch an arm at just the right moment, to pause with silence that made people confess what they hadn't told their own spouses. Sophia trained me well, and the more I performed, the more I was praised. That's when I met Eva, a poet, soft-voiced, with complex emotions and a history of abuse she didn't fully understand yet. She was magnetic, vulnerable. She cried during her first intake call and asked if I believed people could really be broken. I told her no, that they were just reorganized by trauma. I knew the phrase would land. I'd used it before. Eva paid up front for a full year. What she didn't know was that Sophia had flagged her as receptive during a Zoom debrief. In our system, that was code for likely to hand over power in exchange for protection. I didn't question it, not really. I told myself we were saving people, awakening their body intelligence, liberating them from the market dynamics of mediocrity. But in truth, we were just replacing one prison with another. Mine had better lighting and a high-resolution livestream setup. It wasn't just about Eva. It was about learning how to push limits in a world without clear ethical standards. How to deploy cognitive techniques to predict what someone needed to hear before they said it. How to lead with confidence in silence. Because in our game, true leadership meant being listened to without having to speak. Still, beneath the performance, something darker stirred. Eva began to trust me too much. She stopped calling her friends. She asked me how I'd feel if she moved closer to the coaching house. And one night, after a vulnerability exercise, she leaned in and kissed me. I didn't pull away. The rules blurred. The air shifted. I told myself it was connection, but deep down I knew it was strategy. I knew that every moment I let unfold from that point forward was part of a path I had paved, brick by brick, with her own traumas as mortar. And when she whispered that she loved me, I heard Sophia's voice in the back of my mind. People don't need freedom. They need narrative. Give them one, and you'll never lose control. That night, I lay awake for hours, staring at the ceiling, trying to remember the last time I made a decision that wasn't calculated. My mind wouldn't stop racing. My chest felt tight. I couldn't tell if I was the manipulator or the manipulated. But I knew this. The moment I let Eva cross that line, there was no going back, and Sophia would make sure I paid for it. The trap dressed in truth. It didn't take long for everything to shift. Not on the surface, but in the places that mattered, the shadowed secrets beneath the smiles and feedback forms. After Eva kissed me, things didn't explode. They just changed shape. She started looking at me like I was the answer to something she hadn't dared to ask before. And I played the part, kind, gentle, listening with all the emotional engineering I'd been trained to use. But deep down, I was panicking. Not because I didn't want her, I did. But because I knew Sophia was watching. Always watching. Through the cameras we used to review session footage. Through whispers in Slack channels labeled client evolution logs. That was the thing. Nothing was private in our world. And every act of connection was quietly translated into data points, monetized through market emotions, and used to optimize our next launch. But Eva was different. She made me forget the game, if only for minutes at a time. She asked about my childhood. No one ever did that. She noticed when I skipped meals. She once told me I blinked more when I lied, and laughed like hell when I denied it. It was intimate. Dangerous. And Sophia? She smelled danger like a predator. She called me one night, late, her voice flat. She's a variable. Variables don't belong in leadership. I asked what she meant. She paused. Do I really need to explain how fragile this system is? And just like that, I knew Eva's file was being rewritten, from receptive to liability. Sophia had always been surgical with her words. You're getting sloppy, she added. You're letting complex emotions override your cognitive techniques. I tried to push back, mumbling something about true leadership requiring heart, not just strategy. Her silence sliced through the call. You sound like a client. The next day, I found myself in the server room, hands trembling, deleting voicemails Eva left me. Ones where she whispered she missed me, ones I should have responded to. I watched the screen flicker. My reflection in the black monitor looked like a stranger. This wasn't a love story. It was a slow-motion crash between con artist and casualty, only I couldn't tell which side I was on anymore. I tried to create distance, made excuses, canceled her sessions, told her I needed space to process my own alignment. It was bullshit, but dressed up in ethical leadership language, the kind our followers respected. She didn't fight me. Not at first. But then came the email. Subject line. Do you ever feel like you're playing a role? Inside was a poem. It was about a man who used silence to suffocate, who painted his intentions with light, but left shadows where his love should have been. It was too real. And it broke me open. Because even though I had studied psychology tips, used audio manipulation in training tracks, and built my coaching career on the illusion of authenticity, this email was the first time someone saw me. Not the brand. Not the skills. Me. I cried that night. I hadn't cried in years. Not when my startup collapsed. Not when my ex walked out. Not when I first read the clause in Sophia's contract that allowed her to freeze my payments upon ethical review. But I cried reading that poem. And maybe that's what made me reckless. I responded. I told Eva I missed her. That I wasn't sure who I was without the mask. That I wanted out. Out of the coaching world. Out of Sophia's grip. Out of the manipulation loop I was both victim and architect of. She wrote back instantly. Then meet me. No cameras. No scripts. We agreed on a time. A bookstore in a quiet part of the city. But when I got there, she wasn't alone. Sitting beside her, scrolling through her phone, was Sophia. And when she looked up and locked eyes with me, she smiled. That same smile that started it all. Only this time, it reached all the way to her eyes. The price of influence. The moment I saw Sophia sitting beside Eva, my stomach turned to ice. There was no script for this. No psychology tip or persuasion method that could undo the feeling of betrayal crawling up my spine. Eva looked different, alert, composed, like she had stepped out of a dream and realized the bed was on fire. Sophia. She looked amused, like she was watching the inevitable happen. I sat down across from them, pretending I wasn't unraveling. Sophia opened first. You taught her well. Almost too well. My throat tightened. Eva didn't speak. She just slid a folder across the table. Inside, screenshots. My messages. Coaching transcripts. One audio clip I didn't even know existed. Me slurring my words after a night out, talking about how easy it was to puppet people when you know what wounds they carry. I'd been trying to be clever. But there it was, audio manipulation, weaponized against me. Sophia leaned in. I built this system on control. You thought you could use it to find connection. I wanted to say something, anything, but my mind was racing, caught between rage and shame. Sophia continued. You've forgotten the first rule of this game. Emotions are tools, not truths. Eva flinched at that. She finally spoke. You used me, she said, her voice low. You made me feel seen just to keep me blind. I didn't deny it. I couldn't, because some part of me still thought the connection was real, but real or not, I'd handled it like a con artist, not a man. Sophia slid another document across the table, a non-disclosure agreement. Sign it, she said. Walk away clean, or I ruin you. Financially. Publicly. Permanently. I glanced down. It wasn't just an NDA. It was a confession, worded perfectly to imply I'd emotionally manipulated multiple clients and breached ethical standards. It absolved Sophia. Made me the scapegoat. I scanned the room, trying to find an exit that didn't feel like a surrender. I thought about the offshore accounts I helped set up under Sophia's direction, the burner phones, the crypto transfers, the falsified invoices we labeled as spiritual service intensives. I'd buried so many shadowed truths, and now they were being exhumed one by one. If I sign this, I asked, do I get anything? Sophia smiled. You get your life back. Sort of. You get silence. Eva looked away. I realized then, this meeting wasn't for confrontation. It was closure. A setup. A final manipulation tactic wrapped in ethical marketing language. And I was cornered. I took the pen. My hand shook. Every letter I wrote felt like I was burying a part of myself that still hoped for redemption. I signed. Sophia collected the paper like it was a trophy. You were never a leader, she said. You were a mirror. You reflected what people needed, but you never were anything yourself. And then they left. Together. That night, I sat alone in my car, the city lights blurring through the windshield, and I replayed everything. Not just the scandal, but the years that led to it. I thought about the exam techniques we used to vet new recruits. The group behavior models. The late-night Zoom calls where Sophia described market psychology like it was scripture. I thought about how many people I had hurt without touching them, simply by knowing what to say and when to say it. And I realized something that gutted me. I hadn't just been manipulated. I had been trained to manipulate down to my tone, my posture, even my pauses. This wasn't just a job. It was a systematic breakdown of empathy, dressed up as empowerment. And now that I'd signed away my truth, all I had left was my voice. But even that, I didn't trust anymore. Because when you've spent years selling illusions, how do you know what's real inside you? The man in the mirror isn't me. I didn't leave my apartment for days after signing that paper. The NDA, the confession, the surrender. My phone stopped buzzing. My name disappeared from the internal forums, my calendar wiped clean, my photos erased from the website. I had been digitally vanished. But the silence wasn't peaceful. It was suffocating. I kept replaying Sophia's words. You're a mirror. Was she right? Had I ever been real? Or just a container, shaped by market dynamics, cognitive techniques, and someone else's script? I opened my laptop and stared at the empty desktop. No files. No backups. Just one document remained, buried deep in a folder I didn't remember naming. PS1. I clicked. Inside, a full recording of my first live coaching session, the one that launched my climb. I watched it, and what I saw broke me. I wasn't leading. I was mimicking Sophia. Same tone, same cadence, same phrases like true body intelligence and align your emotional syntax. I paused the video. My eyes didn't look human. They looked calculated, like I was watching someone else play me. That night I drank, not to forget, but to numb the static of my own thoughts. I scribbled in a journal, hoping something celestial would crack through the madness, something divine that could pull me out of the hole I had dug. But the page stayed empty. I started scrolling old client messages. Eva's were gone, deleted. But others? They still lived in the cloud. Testimonials from women who said I changed their lives. A man who wrote that my advice stopped him from ending his. And yet, each word felt tainted now. Because I didn't know if those moments were healing or strategy. One message caught my eye, Amara, a client I hadn't thought about in months. Her message was short. They found me. I didn't say anything. That was it. No timestamp. No context. But I knew. Sophia had sent someone to her. The same way she sent them to Eva. The same way she could send them to me. I jumped up, heart pounding, and tore through my apartment. The burner phone. Where the hell was it? I had used it to store contacts from the inner circle. Real names, drop locations, ledger photos. I found it behind a bookshelf, dead, dusty. I charged it. When it turned on, I nearly dropped it. Because it wasn't just data. There were photos, videos, documents detailing our art techniques, recruitment models, NLP tactics, outlines of conversion rates based on trauma type. It was a blueprint for systemic manipulation disguised as empowerment. If the press got hold of this, hell, if one Reddit thread did, it wouldn't just take Sophia down. It would scorch the entire movement. And maybe, just maybe, it would give Eva something real to hold on to. I copied the files to an encrypted drive. I didn't know what I'd do with it yet, but something inside me had shifted. This wasn't just guilt. It was clarity. I had spent years preaching ethical leadership, but I had none. Not really. I had been using tools and tactics to play the game, not to lead. But maybe finally I could change the script. I could expose everything. Be the whistleblower I once swore I'd never become. But just as I stepped outside to breathe for the first time in days, I noticed something strange. A car I didn't recognize parked across the street. Same one, 3 nights in a row. Same tinted windows. I walked past it slowly. No one inside. Or maybe someone watching from the shadows. I kept walking. Tried to ignore the feeling. But when I returned, the lock on my front door had been scratched. Not broken. Just marked. A message. A warning. I was being watched. And suddenly I knew, if I was going to bring this system down, I'd have to do it before they got to me first. The whistleblower in the mirror. The scratches on my lock haunted me for days. I barely slept, barely ate, just stared at the encrypted drive like it might grow teeth and bite. Because I knew what it contained, every ugly receipt, every engineering story, every piece of market psychology and group behavior tactics that we'd dressed up as healing. And if I leaked it, I wouldn't just expose Sophia. I'd expose myself. Every voice note I recorded, every emotional breakdown I puppeteered, every lie I wrapped in love. But the alternative? Silence. Complicity. And I'd done that long enough. So I drove to the only person who might still listen, Tomas, an ex-coach who vanished 2 years ago after violating ethical boundaries. That's what the circle called it. In truth, he got too close to a client, and then started asking real questions. I found him in a dusty art studio in upstate New York, painting fractured human faces. Eyes too big, mouths too small, like reflections in a broken mirror. He didn't say anything at first when he saw me. Just wiped his hands and locked the door behind us. "I figured you'd come," he said. "You finally saw it, huh?" I nodded. I handed him the drive. He didn't flinch. Just plugged it in, scanned the folders, and muttered, "Jesus Christ." We sat in silence as he clicked through recordings of exam techniques, NLP breakdowns, and screen-shared strategy calls where Sophia outlined how to convert doubt into revenue. We even found a module titled, "The Art of Ethical Control." My face was in half of them. "We can't just release this," Tomas said. "They'll discredit it. Or us. You need a plan. Leverage." He was right. Exposing truth doesn't mean anything when the system owns the megaphone. So we started building something darker, a mirrored narrative. We wrote our own modules. Counterprogramming. A manifesto hidden in plain sight. For every dark psychology tactic they used, we built a deconstruction. For every cognitive skill hijacked for control, we gave it context. For every story we once engineered, we offered the antidote, full confession. We called it reversal. The idea wasn't to burn the house down. It was to light a match and let the flames reveal what was always inside. But the closer we got to going live, the more the shadows crept in. Tomas got a call from a block number. No voice, just breathing. My apartment was broken into. Nothing stolen. Just a USB drive left on my kitchen table. On it, a video of me and Eva, from a session I never knew was recorded. Intimate. Too intimate. It had been edited. Twisted. Layered with cuts that made it look like I had coerced her into bed. It was bait. Insurance. A reminder. You expose us, we expose you. I panicked. Punched the wall. Punched it again. I couldn't breathe. I stared at my reflection in the mirror, blood dripping from my knuckles, and realized something I hadn't wanted to admit. They didn't have to destroy me. I already had. Sophia just pressed record. I had become everything I hated. I used body language, cognitive psychology, and positive influence as a means to an end, not a gift. I let work dynamics define my morality, let human emotions become currency, let tools and tactics erode my soul. And still, I wanted to fight. I had to. Not to be the hero. I wasn't one. But to make it mean something. Tomas said we had one shot. Upload reversal to a whistleblower site, then disappear for a while. Let the story do what you couldn't, he said. But I wasn't sure I could walk away. Not without knowing if Eva was safe. So I messaged her from a fresh account. No subject. Just, did they hurt you? No reply. For hours. Then, finally, they want me to speak at the next retreat. My blood ran cold. It wasn't over. Sophia wasn't silencing Eva. She was promoting her. Replacing me. The ghost in her voice was me. They were turning her into me. That was the first thought that clawed its way through my skull the moment I read her message. They want me to speak at the next retreat. No fear in her tone. No hesitation. Just calm obedience. It was textbook. She was no longer the client. She was the product. And I was the prototype they discarded. My stomach churned. I could see it before it even happened. Eva on stage, barefoot, serene, telling a room full of hopefuls how she overcame trauma, how she rose into her power, how the very system that broke her became her salvation. She'd smile like I used to, tilt her head just like Sophia taught us. Her words wouldn't be hers, they'd be echoes. My echoes. Because the ghost in her voice was me. That's how deep manipulation runs. It replicates itself, repackages its prey as profit, and convinces the world it's salvation. I told Tomas. He wanted to drop the drive immediately, let it all burn. But I couldn't. Not yet. I had to see Eva face to face. I had to know if there was still a part of her that remembered what we were before the system rewrote us. The retreat was held in a private estate in Oregon, tucked behind trees and cameras, guarded by volunteers trained in body language reading and NLP techniques. Getting in wasn't the hard part. I still had an ID badge that hadn't been deactivated. I wore a ball cap, kept my head low, and walked through the main house like I'd never left. The air smelled like lavender and delusion. Soft chanting played over hidden speakers. Screens projected celestial insights and market stats. Trauma retention curve. Conversion psychology. Average spiritual ROI. I wanted to vomit. I made it to the main hall just in time. The lights dimmed. The crowd hushed. And there she was, Eva, glowing in white, her voice amplified, her posture flawless. She spoke about pain as signal, about surrendering the ego, about transcending the manipulator within. And every word hit me like a bullet, because they weren't hers. They were mine. Phrases I wrote. Frameworks I designed. Even the way she paused before saying awakening. It was me. I had infected her. The manipulation wasn't over. It was evolving. I moved toward the exit, barely breathing. But just before I reached the door, she said something that stopped me cold. Someone once told me, people don't need freedom. They need narrative. I believe that. I live that. And then I nearly lost myself to it. The crowd froze. Sophia stood in the shadows, arms crossed, unreadable. Eva looked up, directly into the lights, into me, and said, but freedom is narrative, and I'm rewriting mine. Gasps rippled through the room. Sophia's expression didn't change, but I saw it, a flicker of rage. I stepped backward into the shadows. Eva was going off script. I wasn't sure if she planned it, or if something in her cracked open right there on stage. But she wasn't their puppet anymore. And that meant one thing, she was in danger. I rushed to the back, snuck through the staff hallway, and waited. Minutes felt like hours. Then she came. Alone. Eyes wide, breath sharp. I knew you were here, she whispered. I grabbed her hand. We have to go. Now. She didn't resist. We ran. Through the side gate, down the path, across the woods to the road where Tomas waited with the car running. We didn't speak until we hit the highway. And when we finally did, Eva asked one question. Is this what freedom feels like? I didn't know how to answer. Because freedom wasn't clean. It wasn't safe. It was messy and raw and full of shame and fire. But as I looked at her, not a client, not a product, but a person, I realized this. The only antidote to manipulation is truth. And the only way out was forward. We had the drive. We had the story. And now we had each other. But Sophia, she wasn't going to let go quietly. And the war she was about to wage would be her last. When the curtain fell, we were still standing. The plan wasn't perfect, but it was all we had, go public, disappear, and hope the story outlived the fallout. Tomas coordinated the drops, the server room files, the encrypted call logs, the reversal counterprograms, and the internal chats that proved what Sophia denied for years, that our circle was a machine of social manipulation, not healing. I crafted the narrative, recording my confession in one take, no edits. Just me, a microphone, and the truth I had run from for too long. "This is not redemption," I said. "This is accountability." We hit upload just past midnight, launching everything at once. The leaks to the whistleblower site, the anonymous emails to major journalists, the Reddit post that would rip the algorithm apart. Then we vanished. Eva, Tomas, and I slipped across state lines, trading phones and names like fugitives. And for a while it worked. The internet caught fire. Cult coach whistleblower trended for 48 hours. Hashtags like hashtag shadows of justice, hashtag dark psychology unmasked, and hashtag body intelligence scam flooded TikTok. The media came fast. News outlets trying to unpack how people with exam techniques and positive influence tools built an empire on mind racing, group behavior control, and dark forces dressed in silk. The backlash was nuclear. But Sophia, she didn't run. She held a press conference. Calm. Poised. Her voice wrapped in ethical leadership jargon, saying things like betrayed by those I trusted and misunderstood educational structures. And for a moment, just a moment, I thought she might survive it. But then came the second wave, the victims. One by one, women and men who sat in our sessions came forward. Stories of abuse disguised as healing. Sexual boundaries blurred with spiritual mentorship. Financial exploitation under the banner of market emotions and energy investment. And the House of Mirrors cracked. Subpoenas followed. Internal audits. A former assistant leaked financials linking Sophia to offshore accounts, shell companies disguised as nonprofits, and recorded sessions used as blackmail. The truth couldn't be buried anymore. They arrested her in Costa Rica, barefoot, unbothered, still smiling. They said she laughed as they cuffed her, whispered something about control being an illusion. Maybe it is, but not truth. That, I've learned, is stubborn. It resurfaces. It breathes under rubble. It waits. We didn't go back. Couldn't. Eva moved to the coast, changed her name, started writing again. She published poems that didn't mention me by name, but I recognized the scars between the lines. Tomas went silent. Last I heard, he was building a digital archive of manipulation tactics used in influencer and coaching circles. I stayed off-grid, worked odd jobs, spoke anonymously to a few journalists. Never once asked for credit. Because the truth is, I'm not the hero of this story. I'm the warning. I was the manipulator who didn't know he was being manipulated. I was the product of complex emotions, turned into a tool, wielded by a system designed to look like light, but built from shadow. And still I survived. Not clean, not proud, but alive. Sometimes I hear Eva's voice in my head, whispering that freedom is a narrative we write every day. I still don't know if I believe it, but I keep writing anyway. Because manipulation doesn't end with exposure. It ends when someone refuses to use it. When silence becomes testimony. When mirrors crack, and we finally look away. That's what this was. Not justice. Not closure. But a crack. And through it, the light.